Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. More politics today as we continue our look at candidates and issues on the November ballot. Ed Martin, the Republican candidate for Missouri Attorney General, is trying to replace Democrat Chris Koster. We'll be talking with Martin in just a couple of moments. But first, three candidates are seeking to replace Congressman Jerry Costello as he ends his quarter-century hold on the Illinois 12th District congressional seat. Green Party candidate Paula Bradshaw and Republican Jason Plummer have appeared earlier on this program. Today, it's Democrat Bill Enyart's turn. He's a lawyer and the former Adjutant General of the Illinois National Guard, and he joins me in studio. General, Bill, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Don. It's great to be here this morning.
I'm often tempted to ask candidates for Congress, particularly people who have had distinguished careers in non-political fields, basically, what is the attraction to go to what is considered by most Americans to be an institution held in very, very low esteem?
You know, Don, I've been asked that several times. And frankly, the reason that I'm running is because of the status that Congress is held in. And I saw it as an opportunity to consider my to continue my years of public service and to move to a little bit different level in doing that. I really believe that the people of the 12th District want someone who's got some very serious credentials, who's got some serious experience, and can bring that serious experience and those credentials to Washington, D.C. on behalf of the district.
You were talking before we went on the air about your previous position as Adjutant General and how that helps you during the course of the campaign. Tell our audience how it helps you.
Well, it really does, Don. You know, for 25 years, I was a practicing attorney and a weekend guardsman, if you will. And 5 years ago, at that point, I was a one-star general. I'd been promoted to one-star brigadier. And my predecessor in office was retiring as the adjutant general or commander of the Illinois Guard. And we had then four serving generals, and he polled all of those generals with the exception of me. He didn't ask me, but he polled them and asked who should be the next adjutant general. And the consensus was that it should be me. So he made that recommendation to the governor, and it was accepted. But the pace of the National Guard for the last 10 years has been incredible. You know, during my tenure as the TAG, that's in the military, everything's an acronym, of course, so the Adjutant General is called the TAG. During my tenure as the TAG, we had the flood of 08, we had the flood of 11, we had blizzards up north, we had ice storms down south. We had, of course, the largest combat deployment to Afghanistan since World War II, when we sent over 3,000 soldiers to Afghanistan. And day in and day out, every day for the last 10 years, we've had Illinois National Guard soldiers and airmen in harm's way serving in a deployed status. So, you know, and the numbers varied, but it was always a minimum of several hundred people. So that constant pace and that was good training for what I'm doing today.
What do you bring to the table that the other candidates don't?
Well, I think several things, Don. What we need to look at are experience and credentials. You know, the largest single employer in the district is Scott Air Force Base. It brings about $3 billion a year of economic activity, not just to the district, but to the entire metropolitan region. And during my tenure as the TAG, the last couple of years, I served on senior-level policy advisory committees. I served on the Army Reserve Forces Policy Committee, which directly advises the Secretary of the Army. I was in regular consultations with Assistant Secretaries of Defense. And those credentials will greatly aid the district in ensuring that Scott Air Force Base remains the vital element in national defense that it is and also in the economy of the district.
What do your constituents tell you? I mean, not everybody's associated with the military. Not everybody works at Scott. Not everybody, you know, is a participant in the ripple effect from Scott. What are they talking to you about?
Well, the largest single issue throughout the district is jobs. And whether you're talking about the Metro East area, you're talking about deep southern Illinois, you're talking about Carbondale, Mount Vernon, the issues are jobs. And people are concerned about the economy and where the economy is going.
And every candidate that I've talked to, and we've talked to a number of them, not only this election cycle, but many cycles, talks about jobs. It's like talking about education. Talk, general, as they say, is cheap. Okay, what do we do about jobs? How specifically do we create more jobs in your district?
Well, you know, that's a function of a whole lot of things, Don. And anybody who tells you that they have the answer is either deluding themselves or lying to you. But I from what I have observed, and I believe that the largest single factor in our district is really infrastructure. And when we talk about infrastructure, we need to remember really we're talking about two different kinds of infrastructure. I like to call it hard infrastructure and soft infrastructure. Hard infrastructure, of course, would be the highways, the bridges, the levees, the physical plant, if you will, that brings economic activity. And with infrastructure, first of all, when you're building infrastructure, you get the economic activity of the jobs that are building that infrastructure, whether you're repairing highways, building new bridges, you know, the new Mississippi River Bridge that, of course, Jerry Costello had a vital role in bringing here to the district and into the entire metropolitan region. So you have the hard infrastructure, and we've seen that really taking off, particularly in the Edwardsville area and in the Mount Vernon and Marion areas. When you look at Edwardsville, just west of the intersection of 255, Interstates 255 and 270, you've got that warehousing district. There are going to be projected 1,500 new jobs in the next year in that warehousing district. That's there because of the infrastructure, because of the highways there. It's there because of the port authorities in Granite City, in Sojay and Dupo. That hard infrastructure that Congressman Costello helped to bring to the district, to the entire metropolitan area, is vital in driving those jobs. When you look over at Mount Vernon, Mount Vernon sits at the intersection of Interstate 64 and 57. Mount Vernon also has three Class A rail lines, and you're seeing the same kind of development there. Mayor Chesley, the mayor of Mount Vernon, told me a couple of weeks ago that they're anticipating 1,200 new jobs in Mount Vernon between 2011 and 2013, again because of the infrastructure.
Where's the money going to come from to improve and build new infrastructure?
Well, you know, that's the $64 question that everybody's got, Don. I think, you know, clearly we are currently spending far more than we're taking in, and there are two prongs to that answer. You have to have increased revenue to the government, and you have to have cuts in the budget. Now, when we're talking about cuts in the budget, of course, folks are very, very concerned about sequestration, the possibility of the fiscal cliff, as it's been labeled. And clearly, the sequestration is not the answer. You know, when you're doing your household budgeting, you're not going to slash all of your expenses, each expense by 20% or 10% or whatever the number may be. Instead, you look at your budget and you know you have to make your mortgage payment. You know you have to pay the power bill. You've got those expenses that you can't work around. So you're going to cut expenses where you can and where you're able to. In terms of increased revenue, clearly, we can't get there by cuts alone. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal in mid-August. If you fired every single federal employee, including everybody in the military, every soldier, sailor, marine, Coast Guardsman, you only get to about a third of the deficit. So you can't get there by cutting alone. You have to increase revenues. And I think where we have to go with increased revenue is eliminating the Bush-era tax cuts or scaling them back for those folks at the very top of the scale. The president has proposed $250,000 and above as that cutoff. And I think, you know, you can debate whether it should be higher or lower, but clearly that's where we need to go.
A lot of discussion on the national level, too, about eliminating or changing some of the individual tax deductions. Which ones would you be in favor of eliminating?
Well, I think what we need to do is look at the entire tax code as a whole. I don't think you're going to get there by nibbling at the edge, nibbling here and nibbling there. And clearly, I don't think that we can take away the tax deductions that the middle class and the working class so heavily rely on. If you're
home mortgage deductions, that sort of thing.
That's mm-hmm. exactly where I was headed, Don. Mm-hmm. The home mortgage deduction or taxation on health insurance policies. I don't think you can go there. It's just too great a burden on the middle class and the working folks. Then
we have a number of people from your district who want to get into this conversation. I want to bring them in, but we had one of your opponents on just a couple of days ago, Jason Plummer, and he was putting an awful lot of stock in the coal industry over there in the district and what has to be done to restore and revive it. Obviously, jobs are associated here. What are your thoughts about that, and particularly in the perspective of coal being kind of a problem these days because it's dirty, it's considered a contributing factor to climate change. We have demonstrations going on this side of the river, even as we speak, protesting Peabody Coal, for instance, and its policies. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, Don, we have to be realistic about energy policy. And first of all, I believe that what we need is a sound, long-term, strategic energy plan. We don't have that. We haven't had that, and we need to develop that. And I think what we need to develop is an all-of-the-above answer. Any energy source that you look at has advantages and disadvantages, has environmental consequences. Coal currently produces about 40% of the electrical energy in this country. So clearly you're not going to be able to change that dramatically overnight. It's going to take a period of time and a lot of dedication of resources to change that. The coal industry as it stands, in the district, we have the Prairie Energy campus near Baldwin. They've got the scrubbers installed, and actually having those scrubbers installed has brought more work to the district because you've got the labor that you need to change those scrubbers out and clean them and take care of them to produce clean energy. Another interesting factor is that a lot of the coal that's being mined in the district now, and we actually have more coal being mined today than we did a year ago. And we have more more coal miners in Illinois today than we did a year ago. So despite Mr. Plummer's claims that there's a war on coal, we're actually employing more people and mining more coal than we did a year ago. A lot of that coal is going to China. I met with the director of the Southern Illinois University Coal Research Facility a couple of weeks ago. And his point was, why are we mining Illinois coal and shipping it to China? China has very little, from what I understand, environmental regulation, and they simply burn it and spew those fumes out, and they come here sooner or later. We're much better off using that coal in this country where we can maintain some regulation. In fact, when the Patriot Coal Company went bankrupt a couple of years ago, the CEO, when he was talking about the reason for bankruptcy, didn't mention regulation at all, didn't say a word about environmental regulation. What he said were the market forces. And, today when we look at the cost of natural gas, the cost of natural gas today is 25% of what it was 3 years ago, four mm-hmm. years ago. That dramatic reduction in natural gas prices, it's a market force, and that market force is directly impacting coal. And energy production companies, the electrical utilities, are moving to natural gas as quickly as they can because of that reduction in price and cost.
As I say, we have a number of calls, and some of the folks want to talk about issues that have already been raised, but let's get it going with David calling from Belleville. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was calling primarily about the debt. As I said, I felt that was pretty addressed, but moving on from that, I guess I had another question as well.
Go ahead, please.
Sure, thank you. Mr. Ann, you have obviously released your tax returns here. In fact, going back to, I believe, before I was born, even, and I've heard you on the debates that we've watched, discuss at length, why, your opponent, Mr. Plummer, won't release his. And I was wondering if maybe you had a reason, that you thought he might not be releasing those since, obviously he hasn't provided us with one.
Thanks, David. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, David, thank you for the question. But unfortunately, anything that I would say would be speculation as to the reason why Mr. Plummer won't release his tax returns. But let me tell you why I did release my tax returns. I released my tax returns because if you go to Congress, you get to write tax law. If you go to Congress, you get to vote on the budgets that govern tax law and the tax laws that impact every single person who lives in this district, no matter their income status or no matter their age. If you're going to write tax law for everyone, and if you're going to vote on the budgets that impact everyone, I believe that the voters, the people of the district, indeed the people of the nation, have a right to know what your interest in that tax law is or your conflict of interest in that tax law is. I think it's very unfortunate that Mr. Plummer, through two elections and running for office for 4 years now, even though he's been called upon by very high-ranking Republicans to release his tax returns, including Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois, refuses to release them. Even Illinois Senator Bill Brady, who ran for governor on the same ticket with Mr. Plummer for lieutenant governor, even Senator Brady released his tax returns. And in fact, he had 2 years where he paid zero federal income tax, but he still had the moral moral courage to release those tax returns. So I would certainly urge Mr. Plummer to take that step and release them so that people know what his particular interest in tax law is.
Let's try another David, this time in Carbondale. David, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Go ahead, please.
My name is David, and I'm a 26-year-old retired staff sergeant. I was injured in Iraq, and as a combat leader, I saw a bunch of soldiers go over there, and I led soldiers in combat, and I've seen what they've gone through when they've came home. And what my question is, General, as a combat leader yourself who saw soldiers get deployed and saw them return, what are you going to do to help support their plight when they come home here to the stateside from this deployment?
Well, thank you for your service, and thank you for your question. I think a particular problem that comes to mind is the problems that we've seen with the VA medical system. There have been problems exposed at Marion, Illinois, and problems exposed at John Cochran VA Hospital here in St. Louis. One of the things that I found when I was a commander is that what you inspect gets fixed. If you inspect the vehicles in the motor pool, they get fixed. If you inspect the arms room, then the weapons get cleaned and properly stored. So I think one of the things that we clearly need to do is have a vigorous and rigorous inspection system in the VA medical treatment facilities so that veterans get the treatment that they deserve. That's clearly an issue. Another big issue that we have is the transition from being on active duty, whether you're active duty member or a guardsman or a reservist who's been mobilized and then being released. We need to have a smoother transition from that active duty medical system to the VA medical system. We can't have people getting lost in the transfer between the systems. We also need to make sure that the transition from active duty pay to for those soldiers or service members who have become disabled while on active duty, that transition from active duty pay to disability pay or VA disability is a smooth transition. Abraham Lincoln said that we need to take care of those who have borne the brunt of battle, and very clearly there's a serious obligation on the part of all of us to ensure that those veterans are properly taken care of.
Why am I not surprised that you're quoting Abraham Lincoln being a candidate from Illinois? We have a lot of calls from Carbondale today, and here's one that's repeated a couple of times. Carol in Carbondale will take your call now. Go ahead. You're on the phone with Bill Enyart.
Thank you for taking my call, General Enyart. As a senior citizen and a and a longtime resident of Southern Illinois, where there's a lot of unemployment and a lot of seniors. We do depend heavily on the Medicare as well as unemployment for our income. How would you help to strengthen or at least to secure Medicare as it is now?
Carol, thank you for that question. You know, and I'd like to address something now that I'm sure anyone who's who watches television has seen, and those are the attack ads against me saying that I'm going to take I support taking $716 billion out of Medicare. And all those ads have all been debunked by every reliable fact checker, CBS News, USA Today. They've all thoroughly debunked that. And it's unfortunate that those attack ads misrepresent those cuts, but misrepresent those as cuts. Now, Medicare is a critical component of the safety net for seniors. My parents, my grandparents, had much longer and healthier and happier lives because of the Medicare guarantee to seniors. And I believe very strongly that we have to continue that. That's something that people have paid taxes into. You know, some people view Medicare as a welfare. It is not welfare. Medicare is an insurance program that people have paid premiums into. When you pay premiums into an insurance program, you expect that insurance to cover you. Now, there are several ways that the Medicare program can be helped, and one of them would be by allowing the Social Security Administration to negotiate drug prices in the prescription drug program. You know, when the prescription drug program was adopted under the Bush administration, Social Security was specifically prohibited from negotiating drug prices. Now, other government medical care programs negotiate drug prices with pharmaceutical companies, so why can't Social Security? You know, the TRICARE system and certainly my private insurance company negotiates drug prices. Billions could be saved there. Additionally, the studies that I've seen show that about 30% of American healthcare dollars are wasted. They're wasted in excessive administrative costs and excess overhead. We can clearly wring a lot of excesses out of that system. And by wringing those excesses out of that system, we can really protect Medicare and continue providing the medical services for seniors that they rely on.
You mentioned attack ads, and your race has been called one of the nastiest and most contentious in the country. I've met you and I've met Mr. Plummer. You both seem like nice guys. What happens to people like you when you run for office?
Well, you know, first of all, you need to look at who's signing off on the ads and whether Bill Enyard appears and says, I endorse this ad, or whether Mr. Plummer appears and endorses the ad. Many of the attack ads are coming out from out-of-state groups that are funding these. I know more than $2.5 million has been spent to defeat me in attack ads, and the bulk of it from unnamed sources. And I think you need to – I think the voters need to take a look at whose interests are in those attack ads. Frankly, I wouldn't pay any attention to any attack ad. I would only look at the positive ads and look at the credentials, look at the experience. You know, you can go online and read my jobs plan. You can go on, you can Google my name and read everything that I've done for the last 40 years.
About a minute left, and there are two issues that keep popping up on my screen here. I'd like to address them very briefly, if you would. Number one, do you support the inheritance tax, and what would you do to help students repay their loans? Can you do that quickly?
Sure. On the inheritance tax issue, you know, I met with the Farm Bureau about 6 weeks ago. And the Farm Bureau's position on it is, and of course, one of the largest considerations are family farms and small family-owned businesses. They want to be able to protect those family-owned farms from having to borrow money to pay the taxes or from being broken up and sold in order to pay the taxes. And they believe their position is that a $5 million exemption is an appropriate level to be set at. I think that, you know, the Farm Bureau has the best interest of family farmers in mind, And I think that family farms are very analogous to small businesses. So I think a $5 million exemption is, you know, you can argue again back and forth whether she would a little more, a little less, but I think that that's a certainly a good starting point for negotiations.
And very, very quickly on student loans, because you have to wrap this up.
Student, you know, I've had to pay back a student loan, and I know what it's like to have to pay back student loans. I think that the Ryan budget, the Romney-Ryan budget, would devastate student loans. I think that we need to continue student loans, keep the interest rate guaranteed and at a very low level so that students can afford to repay them.
Bill Enyart, I want to thank you so much. A great deal of activity over in your district from people calling in today, but we thank you for being with us in studio.
Don, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Bill Enyart, candidate for the 12th District Congressional seat. He's a Democrat. To listen to conversations with the other candidates vying for that seat, visit our website at stlpublicradio.org and find this show under the Programs tab. Coming up next, Ed Martin. He wants to be Missouri's Attorney General. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.